do it.
Such a twisted man.
Just a little bit thoughtless.
Faith Healer. This Sunday night at 8 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, this evening we're back at the Royal Albert Hall in an hour's time for our late prom. It's given by Penguin Cafe, the 21st century reincarnation of the Penguin Cafe Orchestra. Making its proms debut, Catherine Bott presents at 10:15. Before that, it's time for another Radio 3 Proms Composer Portrait. It was recorded earlier this evening and it's presented by Tom Service.
Welcome to the Amaryllis Fleming Concert Hall at the Royal College of Music, just over the road from the Royal Albert Hall, for this last composer portrait of this year's BBC Proms. We're going to hear three energetic, funky, grimy and uplifting pieces by 37-year-old Tansy Davis, performed by musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. And I'm delighted that Tansy joins me on stage here. Look, Tansy, you are, of course, making your living. You make your living as a composer now, but your musical life started really with the French horn and rock bands as well as orchestra. So when and where did it all start?
Well, in terms of earning a living, I suppose it began with the horn playing, which started as soon as I had done my degree, sort of age 21. And I had a fabulous 3 years as a horn player, freelancing with some London orchestras, including the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and did some West End shows. And that was just a fabulous grounding for a composer to get to know what it's like working with musicians, you know, because sometimes it feels like the musicians are on the other side of the fence or something to composers. But sort of beginning gave me a great confidence in just knowing how to speak to musicians, I think. And I since discovered, well, as a student, a few years later than that, when I went on to study composition, that sometimes composers didn't really know quite how to speak with musicians, and I felt very fortunate that I'd had experience with them.
So you were starting as a composer at that time then?
I was always composing, but...
As a child as well, was it something you were...
Yeah, I suppose I started sort of actually writing down notes from age 13 or something. But I was also writing for sort of strange rock bands as well, because that was the kind of ensemble that was available to me, for me to work with. So I had friends who were really kind and let me write strange things for them. So
where was that, this experimental rock band? In Kent?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to segue a bit now to Saltbox. Can you introduce the first work on tonight's programme we're going to hear, which is Saltbox? There is a relationship with what you were just saying, this fusion or different kinds of influence coming to play in the music.
I think so. It was never something I sort of did consciously, but in fact, Saltbox is a companion piece to Neon, which was written a year earlier.
And which we hear at the end of this programme.
Yeah, and that piece is really something which I consider to be a point in my music where the two sides, sort of the horn-playing side, the sort of classical side, and that really the my love of modernist music, and also the electric guitar-playing side, came together really into one shape, one thing, which is Neon. And it's more to do with the sounds of things like Stevie Wonder's Superstition, things like that, where he uses this fabulous clavinet sound, which I've used. And it's strange in the surface of the piece sounds really funky, that's Neon, but the construction is very classical in a sense. But going back to Saltbox, it's totally different. It's much more to do with landscape. So I'm working with, I suppose it's more, I'm thinking of films, like filmic landscapes, and at the same time there's a very gritty soundscape which you mentioned. And I think of Saltbox as a strange cross between Tom Waits and a Tarkovsky movie, I think. And it's these landscapes, sometimes quite melancholy. I wanted a complete contrast to Neon, which is much more jolly. So that's Saltbox, really.
Well, let's hear it now. Musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama in London, conducted by Ben Jernan.
Thank you.
Tansy Davis's Saltbox, played by musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, conducted here at the Amaryllis Fleming Concert Hall, the Royal College of Music, by Ben Jernan. Tansy, the six acoustic instruments we've just been hearing, but also a clavinova, an electric piano, and a sampler. All three pieces we're going to hear, the next two as well, involve amplification and some use of electronic instruments and sampling. How important are these instruments to you, the kind of creepy noises that the sampler and the keyboard were making in that piece?
Well, in fact, the electronics were added later. That piece was written in 2005, and it still exists as a purely acoustic piece. But I felt I wanted to sort of widen the landscape by adding some electronic sounds. And I've been working for a couple of years only with electronics, so it's quite new to me. But it's important, very important, to have that sheen in the front or in the back, wherever it is, of the the musical picture.
They are very visual. I mean, even the sound of the electric keyboard there, I mean, it has that sort of nostalgic quality of, I don't know, seaside Hammond organs in the 60s and 70s, and then also the sort of strange electroacoustic spaces that you open up. I mean, this isn't, it's not like an, in a way you're using the electronics here, not as an urban thing, but it's exactly the opposite, something to alienate the listener and alienate the sound world a bit.
Oh, I don't know about alienate, but it's interesting you say it's not an urban sound, because all those sounds were recorded in rural France on a very, very icy day in March this year. And I see this piece actually as very kind of rural, actually. I know there are these kind of elements of kind of pop music sounds coming in, but when I go back to the very beginnings of the piece, it was commissioned for the Battle of Trafalgar bicentenary celebrations in Chatham, in Kent. And I remember the original inspiration being the salt marshes around there. So for me, it's very much a landscape, and quite a melancholy landscape piece.
The title of the next piece we're going to hear, Grind Show Electric, seems to suggest a more directly kind of urban dark funkiness. What's going on in Grindshow Electric?
Well, again, this piece exists in two versions. The inspiration for this piece is a painting by Goya, Saint Isidora Pilgrimage, and I have a little picture in my mind which goes with this piece, and I'll try and tie it in with the Goya as well. Okay, so This painting is one of people seemingly fleeing across a landscape towards the front of the painting, and it's at night time. And some of the people look very happy, and some look like they're not. And some are playing guitars, and some could be singing, some could be screaming. So it's ambiguous. And I was thinking about the sort of the back of the painting, in a way, as well as the front, and the relationship between the two. And I wanted to try and bring that into music. So I created a sort of landscape at the beginning, which I see as a sort of rainy night in somewhere very quiet, on a hillside, maybe in Spain, I don't know. But it's a dark, cold, rainy night. And in that landscape is a house. And in that house are four or five different large rooms. Within each room is a party going on, a different kind of party, different kind of scenery going on. And so that's what the piece is about, really, the outside landscape and the interior of these very bright scenes.
Okay, but so there's darkness and light then. I mean, yeah. What's going on in these rooms? Are people having fun, or are they up to?
I mean,
look, the title Grind Show suggests potentially at least ambivalent things happening in those rooms.
Yeah, that's kind of up to the imagination.
Is it?
But it's the thing to listen out for is that the way that each sort of dance scene, if you like, is framed by the dark, rainy sounds of the landscape.
And those rain sounds we'll actually hear in the sound.
Yeah, you hear a kind of, it's not actual rain, but it's a cross between rain and a crackly record sound.
Okay, so more of these dark electronics and warm potentially, well, who knows what's going on in the instrumental parts. Well, we're about to find out. Grind Show Electric, played by musicians from the Guildhall even School of Music and Drama, conducted by Ben Jernan.
Thank you.
Tansy Davis's grind show, Electric. Musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama conducted in that performance by Ben Jernan. Tansy, I think I've got a slightly better idea about what those people in Goya's painting might have been up to in your imagination, or at least in mine, because there's an enormous amount of physical energy in that music, a lot of dancing, and yet it's sort of slightly warped, or I mean, these are dances that happen in seven, you know, like an extra beat rather than in three or four. And I just wonder if there's something in you somewhere where, like, pure sort of simple pleasure is something you resist and you want something more dark, more mysterious in every area of your life. I mean, I was just... But let's deal, though, first of all, with dancing, this idea of yeah. movement, at least.
Well, I don't know. I love the idea that somehow music is sorcery, and that's what I try to sort of do. I try to do sorcery of a kind in mine. So so quite often my music has the sheen of one thing, but actually it's made in a totally different way. So it's not the thing it sounds like, but I love the fact that it's balanced between those two things. And in terms of...
Give us an example of that. I mean, is there anything in Grencha we've just heard, something that that sounds maybe like a kind of, I don't know, 70s funk rhythm kind of, that's actually comes from a completely different place? Or...
Well, just take the honky-tonk piano sound, if you like, and the way it's written, which is in a sort of... The sound it produces is a sort of swing element, but the funny thing is it's written in a totally rigid and classical way, and I love that sort of twisting one thing into another. So I like the tensions of one thing trying to be another, and actually what comes out is somewhere between the two. So that's what interests me. So when it comes to these rhythms, I'm constantly working with new rhythmic patterns and trying to sort of wrong foot the listener, because I find that very exciting myself, when you think you've got a pattern but actually it's slightly different and it's tripping you up, and I think that's fun.
But you require your performers and your listeners then to kind of get into this groove, right, to in order to be able to experience those twists and turns, yeah. and feel them.
It's incredibly hard to play, I have to say. I mean, the effect is something which sounds like it's perhaps improvised or somehow occurring naturally, even though it's lopsided. But still, it's incredibly hard to achieve that effect. So these musicians are fantastic.
We're listening to these three pieces on a chamber scale tonight. But is that twisting and turning, generically speaking, on every level, also true of your bigger pieces, your orchestral pieces, or your music theatre works like Elephant and Castle that you wrote for the Opera Festival? I mean, even when you're writing a trumpet concerto or an orchestral piece, are you always thinking about this idea of wrong-footing or sorcerizing one thing into another?
Probably, I think so. I think in terms of the rhythm, though, I try to explore that in the chamber pieces, because when it comes to an orchestra, you automatically get sort of distortions anyway, because there's so many people playing. Even if you write straight crotchets and quavers, things don't always sound together. But that's the beauty of an orchestra. It's this huge thing which is unwieldy and fantastic in many ways, but not as good at doing these highly intricate rhythmical things that you can do with a chamber ensemble.
The last piece we're going to hear this evening, Neon, is also the earliest piece you wrote, 2004. A lot of intricacy in this music.
Yes, this is really hard to play again. It has the sheen of something which just makes you want to tap your foot. But if you do, you might trip up occasionally. You might stop because it's mostly in seven or something else. And I'm working again with sort of cog wheels, I like to think of them, grooves which are lopsided, and different sizes of cog wheels interlocking with each other so that things are cycling around, but nothing is ever the same twice. Although the material is very similar, and you recognise things, it never comes quite the same twice.
Is that kind of process inspired by anyone, or is that the sort of Davis DNA?
Just me being playful, I think. I love working in this way and inventing things like that. Someone described this piece once as being like a Rubik's Cube, the way it's been put together, and I think that's quite a good description of it, actually, because it's quite similar in the sound of it in many ways, but if you try and sort of grab hold of it, it will always not quite slot into the patterns you're aiming for.
A word on the title, Neon. Again, that suggests, a visual strong visual element to, or inspiration to the piece?
Oh, well, actually, at the time of writing this piece, I saw a fabulous exhibition in Birmingham at the Icon Gallery of work by David Batchelor. And one of the things that he's been fascinated by is colour. And he's written a book called Chromophobia, I think. And he's done a series of installations and photographs which involve fluorescent colours on a very, very bleak black and white background. So a photograph of a bright pink fluorescent stuffed panda bear lying on a grimy London pavement, and the contrast of those things, which I think there's something of that in the piece. Anyway.
So basically, this piece, Neon, then, is a programmatic description of a pink panda bear on a grimy London street, right?
That's it.
Good. Tansy Davis is Neon, musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, and once again conducted by Ben Jernan.
Thank you.
Tansy Davis's Neon, musicians from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, conducted by Ben Jernan. Our thanks to all the musicians for their work in putting together this fantastic, vivid programme, to Tansy Davis for joining us this evening, and to you all for being here at the Amaryllis Fleming Concert Hall at the Royal College of Music. Thank you.
That Proms composer portrait of Tansy Davis was recorded earlier this evening and edited for broadcast. The presenter was Tom Service. Well, there's more live music from the Proms in just under a quarter of an hour. A late night concert by Penguin Cafe. We'll be joining Catherine Bott for that at 10:15. So before that, it's time to rifle through our CD cabinet again. Now, I have noticed that I do tend to go for the drawer marked piano solo quite often when choosing things to play for you. I thought it was time for a change. So, here's something for two pianos.
Thank you.
Well, as you may have worked out after the long introduction, that was the Russian dance from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. It's from a disc recorded by Daniel Blumenthal and Robert Grolo, and the arranger, none other than the 18-year-old Claude Debussy, who made the transcription for Tchaikovsky's patroness, Nadezhda von Meck, while he was living with her as music tutor to her children. Well, a decade later, long after he'd left the family's service, Debussy made another transcription, and you may recognise this one if you either are a violin virtuoso or if you admire somebody else who is one. And if you're a fan of the key of A minor, this is your lucky evening. This is the introduction and Rondo Capriccioso by Saint-Saëns. Debussy, the transcriber, raiding the violinist's repertoire. That was his two-piano arrangement of the introduction and Rondo Capriccioso by Camille Saint-Saëns. Daniel Blumenthal and Robert Grollo were the pianists on that disc. This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 10:15. At 11:45 tonight, Max Reinhardt will be here to introduce Wednesday's Late Junction. Before that, we've the second of this evening's proms. And as you may know by now, there's a new way for you to listen to live proms via an extra high-quality audio stream on the website at bbc.co.uk/proms. So now we join Catherine Bott on stage at the Royal Albert Hall.
Once upon a time in the 1970s, there was a musician called Simon Jeffs who'd grown weary of the stiffness of classical music and the limitations of rock. One night he had a dream about the future, where everyone lived in soulless grey apartment blocks with cameras watching over them all the time, where people slumped in front of television screens, where couples made love in silence and without passion, where musicians worked wearing headphones through which no sound escaped. But there was one place in this dream dystopia where light and the chaotic sounds of humanity spilled out into the street, the Penguin Cafe, where people went to eat and drink, talk and laugh, and listen to the band playing live at the back. Simon awoke from his dream, and he decided that he would write the music that would be played by the orchestra of the Penguin Cafe. Simon Jeffs was the master of tunes that worm their way into our ears and burrow deep into our culture. Even if you think you don't know the sound of the Penguin Cafe, you probably do. As his son Arthur says, there's a quiet generosity to the music. It doesn't stamp up and down. So now we're off to the Dream Cafe to hear the band, reimagined for a new generation by Arthur Jeffs in memory of his father. Tonight, the warm crimson splendor of the Royal Albert Hall offers an antidote to grey soullessness, as the 11 musicians of Penguin Cafe, with special guest Catherine Tickell, reintroduce us and the live Radio 3 audience to the mysterious power of the music that takes on a life of its own. Please welcome, making their proms debut, Arthur Jeffs and Penguin Cafe. Thank you.
Good one.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Penguin Cafe. I'd just like to say that to come and play my father's music at the proms at the Albert Hall, it's sort of like a musical OBE for my father. I just wanted to say that we're tremendously proud to be here and wanted to say thank you very much to the BBC and the Albert Hall and our promoters for working so hard to make all this happen. The next tune we're going to do is called From the Colonies. Thank you. Thank you. For our next number, Swing the Cat, I'm delighted to welcome to the stage Catherine Tickell. Who will also be playing pipes a bit later on in the set. Swing the Cat.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was music for a found harmonium, which my father wrote on a harmonium that he found in the streets of Kyoto, I think. They left a note on it saying, does anyone want this? Came back the next day and it was still there. So he took it home and wrote that piece. This next piece is called Steady State.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This next piece is called Perpetuum Mobile. Thank you. This next piece is called Oscar Tango. Thank you. And now Paul's dance. Thank you. Thank you. This next piece is called In the Back of a Taxi. And then the one we'll do after that is called Pale Peach Jukebox. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. Now the next piece we're going to play is called Organum, which Catherine played the pipes on with my father back when they wrote it. And I've always wanted to play this piece, but in my head it's always had Catherine's pipes on it. So when they offered us the chance to play with someone, the first person I thought of was Catherine, because I just love the sound of these pipes. This is Organum. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, this next piece is one of our new ones. This is, in fact, the world premiere of it. It's called Landau. Hope you like it. Thank you. Thank you. And now another new one. It's called Bramble May.